Now, by some measures, the Trump administration has had a bad start in its first 7 months. Approval ratings are at historic lows, healthcare legislation stalled, and other legislative battles are still on the sideline. Add to that high-profile staff turnover, a running tally of controversial statements by the president, and the ongoing Russia investigations.
Our next guest says that those are all real problems for the president and his supporters, but in lower-profile ways, the president and his team have made a lot of changes in courts, regulations, and enforcement that could make a lasting difference.
David A. Graham is a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers U.S. politics and global news. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you laid out a bunch of specific accomplishments of the Trump administration. Before we get into the specifics, though, there's been a lot of focus, of course, on the high-profile controversies and the tweets, the legislative difficulties. Do we miss a big part of the story if that's all we focus on?
I think we do. I mean, you can very easily get either lulled into a sense of complacency or lulled into despair, perhaps, by imagining that nothing is going on and that the Trump administration is totally stagnated. And I think that misses some consequential changes going on in the country because of federal government policies.
Right. There's a lot a president can do without Congress being on board. And the Trump administration looks like is exercising some of that power.
That's right. What we see is a lot of action going on in the executive branch in areas that, the heads of departments and agencies can do on their own without really involvement from Congress. And for that matter, without a lot of involvement from the White House itself.
Let's get into some specific areas here. Environmental regulation is one you focus on. There is a lot going on there. Can you talk about some of the things we're seeing?
Sure. I mean, it's a whole range of things and it runs across departments. The most high-profile thing is probably Trump's decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. But what's gotten less attention are the sort of policies that go behind that. So that includes the EPA working to roll back the Obama-era Clean Power Plan. That involves rewriting the Waters of the U.S. rule, which the Obama administration planned to expand to cover streams and rivers and smaller bodies of waters than it had previously. That involves, for example, opening up public lands potentially to fracking and to coal mining. That involves trying to roll back regulations on things like methane, although courts have sometimes intervened. So there's a long list of these places where regulations have been cut or reversed or rewritten.
Now, these are things, if one administration does something, the next one can undo it, which is what we're seeing a lot of now with Obama-era regulations being changed. But these are things that in the course of 4 or 8 years or however long there's a Republican administration, these are things that can have long-term consequences, right?
That's right. Exactly. They do have long-term consequences, and some of them are more permanent than others. You know, it is relatively easy, for example, to change the regulations on, I mean, relatively easy. None of these things are easy. Government is so hard, but to change regulations on the way business works, in the financial sector. But these environmental regulations are if you look at the timing, a lot of these things are at a pivotal moment. What the U.S. carbon emissions are like in 4 years says a lot about where the globe will be in 4 years. So these are very consequential changes.
Talking to David Graham about accomplishments, often sort of behind the scenes, behind the controversies in the Trump administration, whether you're glad of the changes or not. Now let's turn to another area you write about, law enforcement. Even as the president has criticized his attorney general, that attorney general has been able to make some significant changes.
Right. And I think that might be one reason you see Jeff Sessions hanging around. Even as he's getting this flack from the Oval Office, he's able to do a lot of things that he's wanted to do for a long time. So that basically that involves sort of tough on crime policies, reinstituting or offering guidance, suggesting that prosecutors pursue strong sentences for low-level drug offenders, which is something the Obama Justice Department discouraged, making it easier for police to seize assets, which is basically when somebody is suspected of a crime but not necessarily charged, police can seize, for example, if they have cash on their person, they can just take that. So you've got a bunch of these policies where Sessions is rolling back what the Obama administration did, and for that matter, bucking a trend in both parties towards sort of fewer tough on crime policies and maybe a softer war on drugs.
Yeah, you wrote in another piece that much of what the president has done and accomplished is what Republicans in general want. But on this issue of criminal justice, as you say, this may be running afoul of some in his own party.
That's right. I mean, I don't think it's an accident that these things that are getting done are generally sort of core Republican Party goals, things that any Republican president would have done, and in fact, not things Trump talked about. But justice is one that is an outlier. Jeff Sessions was to the right of the Republican Party on a lot of justice issues, or rather, he was maybe 10 to 15 years behind where the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, for that matter, used to be. And so you have him bucking what even many Republican senators and governors have asked for in terms of, you know, focusing more on rehabilitation and not going for the strongest sentences and, you know, looking a little bit over low-level offenses on matters.
And on a related note, we've seen a change in the Justice Department's attitude toward local police departments, or the Obama administration had been doing more reviews, more consent decrees. It seems like a Jeff Sessions Department of Justice not so interested in that kind of thing.
That's right. And you know, the things that we see Sessions doing, so that's rolling back the emphasis on overseeing police departments, trying to back out of agreements that already exist with police departments to sort of oversee reforms. These are not things that Trump spoke about specifically during the campaign, but they're directly in line. You know, he would talk a lot about supporting police and the sort of Blue Lives Matter idea. So you didn't hear him saying, I'm going to go out and I'm going to tear up consent decrees with cities. This just isn't the sort of language Trump uses. But the principle is exactly what Sessions is carrying out at the Justice Department.
On a similar note, I mean, of course, the border wall was one of the president's biggest campaigning points. He's going to build that wall. We don't have the wall. We only have a little bit of the funding for it. But you're right that there have been significant changes in the number of people coming across our southern border.
Yeah, you know, it's a testament perhaps to the power of rhetoric. That if you tell people they're not welcome and you make that very clear, people are less likely to come. Now, the pace of crossings of the border has been on a decline. That started in the Obama administration, but it's continued under Trump and in some cases dropped more quickly. So you do see Trump managing to depress the level of border crossing even without having to actually start erecting the wall.
But does the president get to call that a win if he doesn't get the wall or something like a wall on the southern border?
I don't think he does. I mean, I think that's the real political pickle here. These are things that, as I say, tend to be appeal to the traditional Republican dogma and to the sort of business base of the Republican Party. What they don't necessarily appeal to is the coalition that Trump brought into the GOP, people who might not have voted Republican before or might not have voted consistently. What, you know, these are people who wanted to see a wall, and they want, you know, there are all these things that Trump promised, and Trump is not following through on them. There's no wall, there's no Obamacare repeal, and so on. And I think that causes a political problem for him now and potentially in 2020 as well.
Another piece of this that you point to that I think has been most under the radar is what's happening in court appointments. Now, of course, we have a new Supreme Court justice. That was a big deal, I think, in how a lot of people voted in the presidential election. But the Supreme Court is not the only court in the land. Can you talk about what's going on with often lifetime appointments to federal courts?
Sure. I mean, you know, most of the court appointments that go on in a presidential term are obviously not on the Supreme Court. They're at the lower levels, so at the both the district and circuit courts, federal courts. And I haven't checked for a few days. I believe Trump has five confirmed judges in those lower courts and 30 or so nominations waiting. So that's 35 judges already at this early stage in the presidency. They will have lifetime appointments. They tend to be young and they tend to be conservative. And again, these are people who would be on the list for many Republican presidents, but they have the potential to reshape precedent and the law for decades to come and potentially to someday advance to the Supreme Court as well.
And this is something that I think we don't talk about all that often on this show. I don't see that much in the media. It's not a high profile point of political debate. Is this something that people should be paying more attention to?
Well, I think a lot of these things are. I mean, they're really consequential. And you know, I think I am as much to blame as anyone else. The things that the White House is doing are flashy, and they're legitimately controversial. I mean, we talk about these Trump controversies, and they're not, they're not insignificant. I don't think we should be ignoring them. When people say they're a distraction, I tend to doubt that because they are often not good for the president. But it doesn't mean these things aren't happening and they don't matter. And I think they matter for the country, and they also matter from a political perspective.
Now, you wrote about these accomplishments of the Trump administration in one piece. You've also written lately that, in a certain sense, the president is already a lame duck in his first year in office. What did you mean by that?
Well, you think about the things that a lame duck president does. He starts focusing on things that he can do for the executive branch. He loses the ability to effectively lobby Congress. And, you know, he starts turning inward. His aides start to snipe at each other. They start leaving the administration. You see all these things that tend to happen in the last, 7 months of a presidential term rather than in the first 7 months. And I think the things we're talking about, these accomplishments, fit with that. You know, these are administrative changes. They're regulatory changes. And although they are important, they're not things that require a lot of effort or buy-in from the administration. They're things that the president does sort of nibbling around the edges.
We're talking with David Graham, staff writer for The Atlantic, looking at the accomplishments of the Trump administration so far. A lot, he says, changing. A lot of things with long-term consequences in spite of all the high-profile controversies.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you glad or worried that the Trump administration is using executive authority to dial back environmental and other regulations? Do you think there's been too much focus on the tweets and controversies and not enough on what's going on in federal departments? Do you see the Trump administration as a success, a failure, or somewhere in between? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing our conversation with David Graham from The Atlantic, looking at the Trump administration and a lot of accomplishments behind the scenes when it comes to court appointments, regulations changes, and enforcement of federal rules.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see the Trump administration getting a lot done, especially in those lower profile kind of ways? If so, do you see that as good news or bad news? If you voted for the president, are things going as you'd hoped? If you voted against him, are things going as you had feared? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. David, we've talked a lot about the things the president has done with executive actions, but for a lot of the things that he and the Republicans had hoped to get done, he can't do it without Congress. Healthcare, tax reform, the wall, a lot of other stuff. Do you see any signs, given what we've seen so far, that the White House and Republicans in Congress can get together on things like that?
Well, we have a couple crucial things coming up in the next month. We've got a debt ceiling increase and a spending bill, and I think that will be two interesting moments. If they fail to work together, well, one thing, the country will default, which could be catastrophic. So that will tell us something. If they work together, perhaps that will start to build some sort of trust and the two sides can kind of work forward on their other priorities. But, you know, there are these deep ideological fissures that are going on. This is not just a question of they know what they want to do and they have disagreements about how to get there. They have deep disagreements about where they want to go. And the president has not shown the interest or the attention span or the ability to effectively lobby members of Congress on the matters he cares about.
I want to go to our callers at 800-642-1234. Kelly joins us in Milwaukee. Kelly, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to express my sadness around a lot of the rollback for environmental policy. I've traveled in South America spreading environmental messages. I've lived, you know, in Colorado and the Pacific Northwest and seen a lot of the firsthand effects of drought and forest fires and, you know, things that are just unprecedented. And I have two young children, and I just can't fathom the lack of concern and consciousness around that, and just feel like it's a real pity. And I think what I'm seeing with the state of Wisconsin, I lived in Wisconsin about 15 years ago, and coming back and seeing what feels like a lot of steps backwards and rollback of policy just feels really disheartening.
Kelly, thanks for the call. David, I think there are a lot of people out there, like Kelly, worried about the environment. Are there enough people that that turn it into enough of a political issue that, you know, you might see a difference in an election, say, like in 2018?
Well, that's always been that's recently been a big challenge for the environmental movement. A lot of people do care about these things, but it is not always the top priority that people have, and it's hard to build a coalition to sort of swing elections that way. It tends to take real catastrophes to get people moving, and so that remains to be seen. It also doesn't help that many of these moves are things that are kind of quiet under the radar. You don't notice fracking on public lands until it's already started, and you visit a national forest and you see it. The one saving grace for environmentalists, I think, is the courts. You've seen Scott Pruitt's EPA trying to delay rules and trying to shift things. And on a couple occasions, the courts have smacked them down. Once they tried to loosen methane rules, and the court said they didn't have the authority to do that. In another case, they announced plans to delay a rule on ozone emissions. And after a great deal of pressure, including some lawsuits, the EPA reversed course and announced they wouldn't do that delay, which seemed like a case of them being pushed back either by public outcry or by the legal threat, or maybe a combination of both.
Kelly, thanks for that call. Go next to Jim in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi. Trump will accomplish those things that the Republican economic establishment want, which is massive corporate tax breaks and anything that will economically or environmentally aid them and probably be at the cost of consumers. The question I have for your guest is whether he agrees with me that Justice Kennedy will be the swing vote on the Wisconsin election law case coming to the U.S. Supremes, and does he think he will be there for the vote? I'll take my answer off the air.
Jim, thanks for the call. A lot there. First of all, on the economy, Jim saying the president might not do the economic nationalist things that he'd promised in the campaign, might not be able to. The sort of things that Steve Bannon might have been advocating for. He'll only accomplish things that Republicans in Congress already wanted to do.
I think he's got a great point. I mean, you know, Trump and his allies talk about the deep state stopping him. But what's really stopping him is the Republican Party in Congress. And that's where many of his top priorities are sort of going to die. You mentioned Steve Bannon, and I think it's interesting. Bannon said, I believe back in February, that one thing Trump was going to do was to go in and, quote, dismantle the administrative state, close quotes. And instead what we see is the administrative state is the place where Trump is getting almost all of the things he's getting done. And Steve Bannon is, of course, gone. I'm going to take a pass on predictions on the Supreme Court. I've made too many bad predictions over the last 18 months or so, and I don't want to add one to my list.
All right. Well, don't worry. We will be covering that definitely as it goes through the Supreme Court. We are talking to David Graham from The Atlantic right now, looking at President Trump's accomplishments so far in the White House. He says a lot of things with long-term implications when it comes to regulation, to enforcement, to courts, even under the radar in many cases, given the high-profile controversies. Back to your calls now, Jake on the line in Milwaukee. Jake, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Jake?
I just want to bring up, usually when things start going bad for a president, they start some form of military action, and we're seeing that case of history repeating itself right now.
Jake, thanks for the call. And that is something that the president has had control over, David. More troop levels in Afghanistan, though nowhere near as much as under the Obama administration, but also increases in bombing raids and other strikes in other countries around the world.
Jake is totally right. That is an old standby for a president in trouble. I think it creates an interesting dilemma for Trump, and I'm curious to see how it plays out. Because while rallying around a war is often a good move for a president, I think Trump has a couple things that undercut him. One is his tendency to make the worst out of a crisis and make things worse for himself. Another is the fact that he ran promising to draw down the wars. And so while he might gain some boost in the sort of patriotism index initially, he also is going against his base. The third thing is that the Afghanistan war at this point is such a long-running thing that I'm not sure it has the kind of political juice. People don't get excited about it. They are fatigued about it, which is, of course, why Trump also felt fatigued all those months ago when he was running against it during the election.
Jake, thanks. Troy joins us next from Muskego. Troy, hi.
Hello. I just want to say that it turns my stomach from being someone who's pro-labor. I think people are going to realize that all these things that are going on, especially the president's bragging about Foxconn and how that's set up in Wisconsin. But people don't realize this is a non-union, $12 an hour job type situation. And what saddens me is that long after this president's done, there's going to be a hard fight for people to fight for wages and the middle class and benefits again. This president is he's empowering capitalism, and he's oppressing workers.
Troy, thanks for the call. Is there a big difference on labor issues from a President Trump from a president, say, George W. Bush?
Well, I think we're a little bit early to get a good sense of what we'll have in terms of sort of, you know, NLRB decisions. But certainly, the you know, things like Foxconn or like the fight over the carrier plant in Indiana, what you see is Trump sort of bullying companies to stay in the U.S., which is very much out of keeping with what previous Republican presidents did. And then also, but he's essentially buying these jobs at great cost and tax credits. He and partners are buying these jobs at a great cost. So it's, you know, it's adding to deficits and adding to spending. That's something that a lot of Republicans have looked askance at, and we'll see whether that's really a sustainable strategy.
Troy, thanks for the call. David, I mean, what would it take to turn things around for the Trump administration and get those big ticket items through Congress briefly as we wrap up?
I mean, I think he's got to learn how to work with Congress a little bit better, and that's something he hasn't shown a lot of interest for in so far. And the other question, you know, is there a major crisis? And if so, is Trump able to learn to make the best out of it rather than, as we've seen in Charlottesville, making it really into a worse problem for himself?
David, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
I've been talking to David Graham, staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers U.S. politics and global news.